Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 1 of For the Record program number 672, interview with Daniel Hopsicker, talking about mothers on Mother's Day. And this is being recorded on May 10th of the year 2009, and it is, as indicated by the title, Mother's Day. Daniel, welcome back to our airwaves.
Hey, pleasure to be with you, Dave.
Now, if people have never heard of you before, they're tuned in for the first time, Daniel Hopsicker is not only the maven of the madcowprod.com website, but the author of Barry and the Boys and Welcome to Terrorland, the latter now out in paperback with a supplemental edition. That's redundant, but what the heck. Daniel, we are, of course, we're recording this interview on Mother's Day, and the focal point of your research for many years now has been mothers, and we can't use the full term for FCC purposes. And why don't we start with a sort of a discussion of Wally Hilliard's family values. Tell us briefly who Wally Hilliard is, and then fill us in on what he's been doing to uphold family values.
Oh, well, good Lord. Wally Hilliard is the first owned the flight school in Venice, Florida, that Muhammad Atta and Marwan al-Sheikhi attended. And he would have been the first place to start if there was going to be a real investigation into 9/11. He had a business relationship with terrorists. I mean, he an admitted business relationship with the terrorists, and of course, as you and I have discussed many times, 2 weeks after Muhammad Atta and Marwan al-Sheikhi arrived to attend his flight school, his Learjet was busted in Orlando with 43 pounds of heroin on board. Heroin generally comes from Afghanistan, and that's pretty much where Muhammad Atta and Marwan al-Sheikhi came from, and it certainly were. Osama bin Laden was hanging out in 2000, so it appears that somebody had a business relationship with, in this country, with Osama bin Laden before the 9/11 attack. That was my major revelation, and it went along with something found by an FBI translator named Sybil Edmonds, who I don't know and have never met, but she reported that she had discovered FBI documents that she was supposed to be translating that indicated that the State Department was covering up a drug trafficking network associated with the 9/11 terrorists.
And also Sybil Edmonds was able to, she alleges that powerful government officials were part of this and that they had infiltrated to a very high level the United States government, including elements of the military.
Well, and how could they not? How could they not? Take a look at Mexico. You know, take a look at the statement by a UN official several months ago saying that if it wasn't for drug money, the banks would have all failed a couple years ago. Drug money was the only liquidity in the economy, this gentleman was asserting. It certainly seems to me that that's the case.
You know, you're talking about Mexico. Right now, of course, there's been a lot of emphasis on the swine flu that has come out of Mexico. And yet, it's sort of creating a pun. What you've been focusing on is Huffman Aviation and a series of private aviation networks down in Florida through which swine flu, F-L-E-W, and you've been chronicling these various swine, two-legged swine under the circumstances, for quite some time.
Well, you are just a pun master today, Dave. I hope your mother's proud.
Well, she's passed away for many years, but wherever she is, let's hope she's proud.
Smiling down on you, I'm sure. That's what I track because that's the major unreported story and the big taboo. We are not allowed to discuss. It's as if we had a business equal to our military industrial complex, equally large, that doesn't get discussed in newspapers, because that's what the drug business is. It's a business that actually it's a business that's necessary in order to traffic weapons, which is probably why our government is involved in it. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a problem with our government being involved in it, except there's 2 million people in prisons today for offenses selling small amounts of what individuals associated with their government are bringing in by the ton.
You know, in all fairness, too, we should say that I'd like to, when I discuss that subject, I use the term elements because there are other elements of, you know, the intelligence community, the military, and so forth, that are sincerely opposed to the drug traffic. And one of the things that...
I don't believe that's the case, my friend.
I think there's some.
I don't believe anyone associated with either the DEA or the CIA is unaware of the strategic importance of control of drug importation.
A lot of them are up there. Some of them, though, one of the reasons we wind up knowing about some of these things is through some of the whistleblowers like Sybil Edmonds and others who
low-level people.
Yep.
Okay. Who aren't in on the joke. It's generally like when I went to Venice to investigate 9/11. The local sheriffs would talk to me. Okay.
Yep. Yep.
But you know, federal officials would not. Okay.
So, mm-hmm.
And then the local sheriffs would be chastised and would shut their mouths. But it's generally people low on the chain who don't get the joke, aren't in on the joke, and they tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
In any particular circumstance.
And they pay the price for it, too.
Yeah, generally they do. Mm-hmm. Generally, that is the case.
Well, one of the sad things about the way it operates is if you're going to move up, once you sign on with the FBI or any one of these organizations, or the CIA or elements of the military, if you're going to move up, you know, you can't anger your bosses. You can't anger the folks above you who are responsible for promotions, etc. So, you know, it winds up being a kind of mafia, and it shouldn't come as a surprise they wind up hooking up with elements of the mafia.
You know, well, you're a pretty well-read guy. You know who Anthony Summers is?
Of course. Of course.
Okay. He spent a month with me in Venice last year. He is writing a major, it's coming up through Random House, so of course it's major, a book on 9/11.
Really?
And when he got in touch with me, he came to see me then he said, "Well, I'm gonna, he wanted to know if I was like just talking, if I was smoking something, apparently." And he told me that he had a friend at the Miami Herald, and he had asked this anyone he'd asked, including his friend at the Miami Herald, waved him off from meeting me.
Yep.
You don't want to meet me, you know. I mean, I have no idea what they say about me in private. It really doesn't matter. But then he asked this guy, he said, "Well, okay, well, who is the guy in the Miami, who's the go-to 9/11 guy in the Miami Herald?" Well, there isn't one.
I was going to say, you know, go-to guy.
One. I mean, it's like Watergate happens in Washington, D.C., and the Washington Post doesn't have a reporter assigned to it. Okay? That is the sad fact. So, at any rate, Anthony Summers spent a month, and I certainly filled him in. It was kind of a bittersweet moment. I realized that the only way a lot of the things I discovered would ever reach a mass audience was not through my efforts, but through his. Okay, well, maybe my efforts, but, you know, I wouldn't be getting paid for it.
by the way, Anthony Summers, for people who might not be familiar with him, is the author of, among other titles, The Price of Power, a very good book about all the dirty dealings going on in some of the dirty dealings going on in the Nixon White House. And before that, in 1980, Conspiracy, in which he said, lo and behold, and to many people's amend, you know, I'm being facetious, that there was a massive high-level conspiracy behind the assassination of President Kennedy. So
yeah.
That's who Anthony Summers is.
Yeah, generally, I've read pretty much all of his books. He's an excellent writer. He's a meticulous historian. And his books get published by Random House. While he was with me, you know, in an unguarded moment, you know, I asked him, I said, "Well, you know, dude, how many guys like you are there? You know, I mean, that actually, you know, are able to report something like the truth, you know, with major publishers." And he's not very many.
Mm-hmm.
Not very many. And I guess he worked for the BBC. You know, here's an interesting anecdote. He wrote a book about the Kennedy assassination. I remember reading it many years ago.
Right.
Haven't read it since. But what he told me was he was working for the BBC at the time of the Kennedy assassination, and he almost got to go over the next day. to Dallas and investigate. Almost, but he didn't, okay? Well, 9/11 happened, the same thing. I mean, you know, I went to Venice. No one else did. He comes along 7-8 years later, but hopefully some of the major revelations, I hope the drugs aren't. Here's what we want to talk about. We want to talk about the continuing efforts of the people that were associated with the terrorists in this country, and they include Wally Hilliard and his business associates, people he owns businesses with, like Pervez Khan and Michael Brassington, and what they've been doing. And Wally Hilliard has been active since 9/11 in numerous ways. And these other people are in the middle of what should be a huge scandal, but apparently we don't have huge scandals anymore. It's a customs corruption scandal down in South Florida that involves both of the planes from St. Petersburg that were busted to Mexico with five tons of cocaine apiece. One had 5.5, one had 4 tons of cocaine.
One of the things, Dana, butting in ever so briefly, your work, and it's particularly your work on September 11th, in many ways is kind of like the waste of an hourglass, because your first work was on Barry and the Boys and Barry Seal and the Iran-Contra drug trafficking, and really Barry Seal is kind of a microcosm for a whole lot of things, including the Kennedy assassination. And then you followed many of those tributaries, many of those lead to September 11th and the whole imbroglio down in Venice. And since then, to your great credit and eternal impoverishment, apparently, you followed those tributaries forward, and as the sand has dripped through the waste of the hourglass, we're coming on all sorts of overlapping criminal conspiracies with many of the same cast of characters that have revolved around Huffman Aviation and those other aviation networks in Florida.
The same people.
Yep.
The same people. Wally Hilliard owned the Terror Flight School, Huffman Aviation. The co-pilot on his heroin Learjet that flew 39 times to Venezuela and back before getting busted was a guy by the name of Michael Brassington, who has since been involved in, I mean, he's been involved in 4 scandals that I can count in the last 2 or 3 years. Most importantly, a plane from his charter company crashed with a major, it was the biggest story on the news in New York City, because it crashed across the river on February 5th in 2005, and they discovered that the jet had not been properly maintained, that they were just, you know, that they were flaunting laws and regulations with impunity. And he was indicted for recklessly endangering passengers on 23 felony counts 2 weeks after the Bush administration left office. And what that said to me was there are at least a few honest people in our government that would have loved to indict Michael Brassington, because it's not that they discovered things in the 2 weeks after Bush left office that were not apparent in the 4 years before. But Brassington was being protected by the Bush administration.
That's kind of what I was driving at in my comment earlier about some people are sincerely opposed to this kind of thing, but you know the fix often is in. So now 2 weeks when Bush leaves office on January 20th, 2009, 2 weeks later, Michael Brassington allegedly the pilot on the Learjet.
Not allegedly. In my new documentary, I have interviews with 4 aviation experts in South Florida,
mm-hmm.
including a former customs agent who saw when Michael Brassington came through a DEA lookout. I have things to tell you, Dave. I'd prefer to tell you these things after the show's done. It should be done at the end of the month. It should have been done 6 months ago. But then Art and Adele got busted, and I had to like go, what's up with that? But Michael Brassington had a DEA lookout on him that every customs agent saw when Michael Brassington came into the country, which he did often.
Mm-hmm.
And it referenced the bust in July of 2000. So I was absolutely correct in reporting that Michael Brassington had been the co-pilot on that plane. It's not an alleged thing anymore.
Oh, okay, because I thought Diego Levine? Wasn't he the pilot on that one?
Well, yeah. I got news about Diego Levine, too.
Okay.
But with the lookout on Michael Brassington, when someone places a name in the customs computer,
mm-hmm.
so when that individual approaches a customs agent, that customs agent looks down at his computer screen and goes, whoa. There's always a contact person associated with it, okay? I forget what the terminology they use, but it's the guy that watches this guy. Anyway, in Brassington's case, it was an ICE agent named Norm Bright in South Florida. And when this rookie customs agent had Brassington come through and saw the DEA lookout, Brassington came through, the customs agent saw the DEA lookout and was about to give Brassington and his plane a thorough going over when Brassington presented a letter from a high customs official saying he was all right, countermanding the DEA lookout. This rookie customs official in Fort Lauderdale, flustered like a deer in headlights, went backstage, whatever they call backstage, and phoned the ICE agent who was in charge of Brassington's file to ask about him. And the ICE agent, whose name is Norm Bright, okay? Special Agent Norm Bright, told this
ICE stands for what? I'm not familiar with the term.
Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
Okay.
They're all under Homeland Security now, alas.
Alrighty.
We'll talk about that sometime. But this rookie customs agent phoned Norm Bright, the immigration and customs guy in charge of Brassington's file, and Bright told him to treat Brassington as a grave threat to national security.
So in other words, now that the DEA had this guy on a watch list, the rookie customs agent, at seeing this, immediately alerts people on high. Some people on high tell him, no sweat, this guy, or no, he has a letter saying that he's cool, but then the Iceman, when the Iceman cometh, so to speak, he says, treat this guy like a grave threat to national security.
An associate, a business partner of Wally Hilliard's, is considered a grave threat to national security. And he, my friend, is not the only business associate of Wally Hilliard's to be considered a threat to national security.
Tell us about some of these other grains of sand that have poured through the waste of that hourglass.
Well, there's Pervez Khan. See, Wally Hilliard would keep his name off almost everything. I mean, he ran charter airlines. He retired to Florida and a year later owned 40 jets, okay? I mean, that should tell you all you need to know, okay? My dad retired to Florida and, you know, bought some lime green leisure suits and started playing golf. God bless him. My dad's passed on, okay? Hope he doesn't mind. I'm sure, I hope he doesn't mind the joke. So Wally Hilliard was obviously fronting for a large organization, which, in my way of thinking, could only have been the CIA, because who else? If you move to Florida and buy 40 jets, who's going to take notice? Okay, who's going to take notice? It's got to be the CIA. And these jets were flying all over the world. It wasn't like they were flying, just inside the states. They were mostly overseas. So he was fronting. He was the for the CIA down there, and he bought a couple flight schools, which very shortly thereafter began to be flooded with Arab flight students. And if that's not a CIA operation, then I missed my bet. The CIA was public about the fact that they, after 9/11, that they had been unable to infiltrate any assets into Bin Laden's organization. Well, if you train in dozens of Arab pilots associated with Bin Laden, working for Bin Laden, something's going on. Now, none of this has come out. None of this. And this rookie customs agent that pulls Brassington aside, okay, discovers when he calls the officer in charge of Brassington's file that he's to be treated as a grave threat to national security, but nobody tells him why. It is only 2 years later when he begins to Google dates, that he discovers my stories on Brassington and puts and discovers that Brassington worked for Wally Hilliard, the man that owned the Terror Flight School. And I was told both by him and by a retired customs supervisor over in Fort Lauderdale that since the advent of the Department of Homeland Security, they are on a very short leash, operating on a need-to-know basis. Okay, in other words, they're treated as if they are potential problems. In other words, you don't want to know. They don't want people knowing too much down there.
In other words, they put blinders on them like they were draft horses.
Well, I mean,
in effect.
This is ridiculous, Dave. This is ridiculous. This is the guy, Michael Brassington, who worked for the man that owned the flight school that trained Muhammad Atta. He's listed as a grave threat to national security, and yet customs agents who see him coming in and out of the country every day after 9/11 don't know why. They aren't allowed to know why.
Mm-hmm.
Where do we live? Where is this? What's going on? You know, it gets awfully absurd, and that's the way it is. So, just as I think probably what I am exercised over the most is the fact that we have no free press and we aren't allowed to know these things. And so, how can we be a free people if we, you know, an informed citizenry is the prerequisite for democracy. And if we are not or do not have an informed citizenry, you know, we aren't a democracy. And clearly we're not allowed to know. I mean, and this was, I grew up during the Vietnam War and never was completely sure what that was about. I was completely sure that it was that I was against it. But, you know, 10 years later, even people like my dad, you know, in his lime green leisure suit, couldn't have told you why he supported that war. And the major events that have occurred in our lifetime, you're in my lifetime, we have not been allowed to know what was going on.
Of course, Daniel, that's why you and I do what we do. Very briefly, I just want to fill in people who may be tuned in for one of the first times or not familiar with your work. The drug bust that you're referring to in connection with Wally Hilliard and Brassington was one of Wally Hilliard's jets, a Learjet, that got popped in Florida with 43 pounds of heroin on. Or was 43 pounds or 43 tons? It had to be 43 pounds. 43 tons couldn't fit on a Learjet, but still the largest drug bust in Central Florida history.
The largest heroin bust in, 43 pounds is what is known in the trade, I discovered, as heavy weight.
Right.
Nobody ever happens into 43 pounds of heroin. And heroin comes from Afghanistan. So, what the heck, Dave? I mean, what the heck? Where is Seymour Hersh when you need him? Where is Bob Woodward when you need him? You have Daniel Hopsicker at the Mad Cow, and that's why I call what I've been told many times. Well, I can't take you seriously, the Mad Cow News. You know, well, it's my, you know, if I have to explain it, it didn't get across. But it's my ironic reference to the fact that real news these days doesn't come from the New York Times or the Washington Post. It comes from the Mad Cow News.
Yeah, but you're doing a pretty good job. I guess you could call the Mad Cow News the herd shot round the world. You know, because you do a pretty good job. And
what are you taking? I mean, smart drugs for obviously. Because are you always like this? Are you a punster?
Well, you know, I'm a wordsmith of sorts, and you know, one of my favorite quotes. I got a lot of those too, but comes from Nietzsche, who observed that quote, "A joke is the epigram on the death of a feeling." And when I listen to you relating, for example, you know, if Joe Schmo or Jane Doe gets caught flying a plane with 43 pounds of heroin, they're history. They're never going to see the light of day again. On the other hand, if you've got a get-out-of-jail-free card, if you're one of these elite deviants, as you call them, if you've got more connections than a switchboard, as I like to say, then you wind up being one of this cast of characters. And these various sands that have passed through the waste of the hourglass that is September 11th, extending that metaphor. And it brings us to an awful lot of really rotten doings today. You know, I'd like to get into, you know, everybody's focusing on the economic collapse and, you know, Madoff. You have a guy they call Mini-M or Mini-Madoff. But since this is Mother's Day, and since we're talking about mothers, and since we've got about 3 or 4 minutes left on this side of the interview, Daniel, Wally Hilliard was manifesting his own set of family values with his stepdaughter. Tell it. You have a story about that. Encapsulate that for us in a couple of minutes.
Well, I'm going to tell you something now that I never wrote, okay?
All righty.
Because without several sources, I considered it scurrilous. I got an email from a couple who were longtime friends of Wally Hilliard's. In fact, one of them stood up at his last marriage. And afterwards, they found out I'd written about him, and they emailed me because both of them were convinced, they wrote me, that he had been molesting his new wife's oldest daughter, who was then 13.
We should put that in the category of allegations from these people.
Well, absolutely. Yep. Well, I never wrote about it.
Hence the use of the term allegation. You've got enough lawsuits that have been filed against you in the past, Daniel. We can get to that inside too.
I'm about to be sued again, so maybe I'm just going out and, you know. You know what? Wally Hilliard wouldn't sue me in a million years, okay? Nor would Rudy Dekkers. Rudy Dekkers, I found, was telling everyone he was going to sue me for $20 million. Well, he'd have had a hard time collecting, but he would never. You can't sue when the thing that you need to avoid more than anything else in this world is being questioned under oath.
Plus, court records are public documents, and if they put this forward, then anybody else can run with it.
Yeah, but you can't sue in those circumstances. Anyway, so, I mean, you know, again, I wouldn't be telling you this now, except for the fact that he was arrested for beating her up.
This is his stepdaughter in downtown. What city was that? Was that Naples?
It was in Naples.
Yeah.
I mean, a guy stepped in and said, "Hey, stop that." And Hilliard said, "What, are you going to get in my private life?" And he said, "Yeah, if you're going to beat up a girl."
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I mean, this is shocking. And Wally Hilliard is a deacon in the Mormon church down there. What kind of behavior is that, do you think?
That's truly elite deviance, to go back to a phrase you
used.
Oh,
it absolutely is. He's a slick, evil mother. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's who Wally Hilliard is. He got rich with a health insurance company that bought policies, health insurance policies from other companies that had found them unprofitable and made them profitable through the simple expedient of not paying on claims.
Daniel, we've got about 45 seconds left on this side. I just want to mention briefly, after he beat up his stepdaughter, you quote somebody in your article who, somebody questioned him and asked Hilliard if he was afraid of going to jail, and he says, "Baby doll," now he said, "not in Florida, baby doll, nobody ever goes to jail in Florida. Daniel, 20 seconds, tell us about your website and your books.
MadCowProd.com. Barry and the Boys is out of print at the moment until I raise enough money to, although it's selling well, and it's selling because it's temporarily out of print on Amazon for $180 a piece. So I have a few. Anyone wants the signed first edition, I'll sell it to them and they can turn around and make a few bucks, or maybe I should do that. And welcome to Terrorland. I've got a new show coming out called The New American Drug Lords,
which
I've been working on for a long time.
Yep, and we'll hear about that on Side 2. We've been visiting with Daniel Hopsicker, and this concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 672. Interview with Daniel Hopsicker, talking about mothers on Mother's Day. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.